And we hear next a report of the day's news. Here's Ron McGee.
Good evening. White House officials refused to comment today on speculation of a possible halt to the bombing of North Vietnam ordered by the president. According to Reuters, a spokesman said, "Anything that is going to be said will be said in Saigon," but added that this did not mean that anything would be announced there. There has been speculation that President Nixon might authorize a bombing halt to coincide with the South Vietnamese and NLF Christmas and New Year ceasefires. The Saigon government announced yesterday that government troops had been ordered to observe two 24-hour truces, one at Christmas and the other at New Year's. The NLF announced its Christmas truce will begin at 1 o'clock today, Vietnam time, and the South Vietnamese truce will begin 5 hours later. President Nixon, who is spending Christmas at Key Biscayne, Florida, was reported to have approved of a bombing halt, but added intensive air raids would resume afterwards in conjunction with secret diplomatic moves designed to reach a negotiated settlement in Vietnam. According to Reuters, the Washington Star reported today that Nixon approved a brief pause in the bombing to begin at 6 p.m. Saigon time, but dropped the story from its later editions. According to AFP, the U.S. Air Command reported today 760 strikes by U.S. fighter bombers in South Vietnam. 115 of the attacks occurred in the northernmost province around Quang Tri City, where government forces are trying to enlarge the area of government control. According to a report by Reuters correspondent Michael Fathers, the 24-hour truce began in South Vietnam without incident, but there was no indication by the Saigon command of a possible bombing halt. American B-52s were pounding targets throughout the north earlier today. According to the Reuters correspondent, the U.S. command in Saigon refused to discuss the possibility of a pause in the bombing, or even if new raids were being planned for Sunday night. Radio Hanoi said three U.S. planes were shot down between dawn and noon today, and according to Hanoi, 47 U.S. planes have been downed since the resumption of bombing last Monday. The Saigon command reported heavy fighting earlier today in the provincial capital of Con Tum in the Central Highlands. 47 guerrillas were reportedly killed in the two fierce clashes around Firebase November, 7 miles northwest of Con Tum City. In other attacks, rebel gunners fired three rounds of 105-millimeter artillery into Con Tum City, but there were no casualties reported. North Vietnamese gunners fired 310 rounds of artillery and mortar fire into marine positions five miles northeast of Quang Tri City, capital of the northernmost province. Marines reportedly killed 24 North Vietnamese troops, suffering no losses, with three wounded. Another 21 North Vietnamese were reported killed in the Quang Tinh province in clashes with militiamen south of Da Nang. According to Reuters, Nhan Don, the official Hanoi newspaper, today urged North Vietnamese militia forces and villagers to send captured U.S. airmen to prison camps as soon as possible. The paper did not give specific reasons for doing so, but added that a number of U.S. POWs had been injured while on their way to various prison camps. The official North Vietnamese news agency reported on Friday that a number of U.S. POWs in a special camp known as the Hanoi Hilton had been injured in American raids on Wednesday and Thursday. According to Reuters, 55 U.S. airmen have been officially listed as missing since the start of U.S. bombing raids over the north last Monday. According to AFP, Cambodian government forces recaptured two defensive positions Friday, and that had been in the hands of anti-government forces for the past week. The two positions, 1 mile north and 2 miles west of the provincial capital of Kampong Tham, were the scene of renewed fighting since December 7th. Kampong Tham came under daily mortar and cannon fire last week, despite the presence of 2,000 government troops, and according to some people who visited the city, its defense perimeter has now become less than 1/2 mile in radius at some points. Kampong Tham province has been occupied by anti-government forces since June 1970, and at the end of last week, the position of the city seemed perilous. Helicopters encountered fierce anti-aircraft fire when trying to bring supplies into the city, whose main airstrip had been destroyed by the guerrillas. The Hanoi Ministry of Public Health and Safety said yesterday that the U.S. bombing of Bac Mai Hospital in central Hanoi caused the death of 23 medical personnel and 2 children. The ministry said that one physician, a pharmacist, 15 nurses, and 6 medical students lost their lives in the hospital. Shortly after noon on December 19th, bombs destroyed the clinical consultation section and the Ear, Nose, and Throat Institute. The Central Laboratory for Clinical and Fundamental Research was completely destroyed, and 4 members of the staff were wounded. The ministry went on to say that B-52 carpet bombing on December 22nd destroyed patient wards, the dermatology section, the internal medical section, the hematology laboratory, the Department of Pharmacology, kitchens, repair shops, and laundries. All but one of the hospital's patients were removed to safety shelters before the raids occurred. AFP reported today that North Vietnamese General Vo Nguyen Giap visited anti-aircraft installations in Hanoi yesterday, seemingly putting an end to rumors that Hanoi's top military strategist had been killed by a landmine near Haiphong yesterday. According to Hanoi Radio, Giap visited installations along with North Vietnamese Prime Minister Pham Van Dong. The report of Giap's death came from South Vietnamese intelligence sources yesterday, and according to AFP Hanoi correspondent Jean Thorval, Nhan Dam, the official party newspaper, published a photo of Giap inspecting a ground-to-air missile base in Hanoi area Friday. AFP reports that leaders of the Provisional IRA and Sinn Féin made an attempt to negotiate a settlement to the conflict in Northern Ireland. Reports of a possible ceasefire were circulated last month after Irish Prime Minister, or Irish Premier, Jack Lynch, pushed a law on crimes against the state through the Irish Parliament. It was reported in the London Sunday Times that the Provisionals see a possibility of a permanent truce in Ulster if the British government offered foolproof guarantees. They never made clear what the foolproof guarantees would be. The London Times said the following conditions must be carried out, a statement of principle by London, saying the entire Irish people must have a say in the fate of Ulster, amnesty granted to all political prisoners and refugee militants, and a withdrawal of all British troops from all troubled zones, spanned over a period of 3 years. In the Philippines, AFP reports that the Philippine government has agreed to release 76 political detainees, some of whom have been held in military stockades for more than 60 days. Amongst those released were 3 congressmen, 2 mayors, and a former senator. Earlier, the government had released an opposition party leader, 3 delegates to the Philippine Constitutional Convention, and 18 journalists. Their release coincides with the lifting of a midnight curfew by the Philippine government. With the lifting of this curfew, Roman Catholic Filipinos will be allowed to attend midnight mass. The lifting of this curfew will last for only 1 day. Meanwhile, Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos has given a grant of executive clemency to 327 inmates confined to prisons near Manila. According to a government announcement, the traditional Christmas gesture grants either absolute pardon, a special absolute pardon, a conditional pardon with parole conditions, or the commutation of sentence. Police in New York believe there may have been a political overtones behind the setting of incendiary devices in 3 of Manhattan's leading department stores. Last night and this morning, police said in a report, quote, it's political and we know why. 2 incendiary devices went off between 5 and 6 p.m. last night on the 6th and 8th floor of Bonwit and Teller. A 3rd explosion occurred at Bergdorf Goodman on the 5th floor fur department around 7:40 p.m. The 4th device went off around 2:15 this morning at the newly opened Gimbel's at Lexington Avenue and 86th Street. There was no more information given by police for fear that potential suspects might be tipped off. There were no injuries in any of the incidents, and the damage caused by the fires was minor. According to a government communique, Rhodesia has closed the Centenary area to unauthorized personnel due to increasing attacks by African nationalist guerrillas during the past few days. According to Rhodesian security forces, there has been an increase in increased offensives against civilian targets in the tobacco growing area of Centenary, which borders on both Zambia and Mozambique, and security forces have been placed on standby for emergency duty. The guerrillas attacked 2 European homesteads this past week with rocket, machine gun fire, and hand grenades. Rhodesian security forces followed the guerrillas, who moved into the Mozambique frontier, and reported killing 2. Finally, Four Rhodesian soldiers were injured when their military vehicle struck a landmine. Two of the soldiers suffered broken legs, one is suffering from shock, and the fourth is in serious condition. And that's the news compiled from Reuters, the French press agency, and the United Press International City Wire, and other sources. If you have a possible news item for us, the phone number is 826-0628. The news was prepared by your reporter, Ron McGee. Good night.
The news was live on WBAI in New York City.
Welcome to News of the World, a fortnightly magazine of world affairs produced by the Public Affairs Department of WBAI-FM. Your host tonight is Ed Rust. Tonight's lineup, a report by Fred Braffman of Project Air War on this week's massive bombing of Hanoi. Race problems in Britain, described by Michael White from London. Japanese economic inroads in Southeast Asia and in the world shipbuilding industry, from Gene Cooper in Hong Kong. And Norman Thorpe in Seoul, South Korea, on the controversial trial of a man accused of espionage. Our first report comes from Fred Braffman of Project Air War in Washington. Braffman lived in Laos from 1967 to 1971, interviewing hundreds of refugees about how it was to live under air bombardment. He visited North Vietnam for a week last month. And in this report, he discusses the past week's massive air bombardment of Hanoi.
The most important thing to be recognized in the present period is that the present B-52 bombing of Hanoi represents one of the great atrocities of our time, an atrocity which recalls the bombing of Dresden, Coventry, the Blitz of London during the 1940s. To begin to understand this, for someone who hasn't been to North Vietnam, even for one who has, is difficult. I mean, before I got to North Vietnam, I sort of had this image of even after having lived in Laos, of a kind of well-built-up capital of people living in cement houses, very well-prepared, sort of relatively wealthy compared to any other part of Indochina, not in terms of material goods, but in terms of the basic structure of the society. And I think if I have any two dominant impressions of Hanoi, it's first of all just how poor the people are, how many people are living in mud huts, the kind which would crumble easily in a bombing raid, in wooden houses, the kind that would burn easily. And secondly, of how densely populated it is. They estimate that over 10,000 people live in an area about a square mile. And as you go along, you see, of course, there aren't any great buildings in Hanoi. There are no buildings more than a couple of stories high, and most are only one or two stories high. And as a result, this population of 800,000 people lives sprawled out for miles and miles from the city center. You see swarms of people on bicycles during the day, just hundreds. You can close your eyes and open them up, and you hardly hear anything when you close your eyes, because most people ride bicycles. When you open them up, you'll see maybe 500,000 people stretching out on one of their broad avenues. And so any kind of bombing of this city, of a city as densely populated and as poor as this, would have, of course, just a tremendously devastating kind of effect. Now, I think it's relevant, before talking about what's going on, to realize that this was and is recognized by our leaders. For example, the Pentagon Papers have a study that was prepared by the Department of Defense, which states that, quote, experience has indicated that systematic operations, particularly against road and rail routes in the Hanoi Haiphong area, would involve substantial civilian casualties in the many suburban civilian areas located along these routes. This, of course, did not diminish the drum beating for bombing Hanoi during the Johnson administration. And the purposes of bombing it were made quite clear in a memo by the former Air Force Secretary, Harold Brown, which he wrote on March 4, 1968. He wrote, quote, "The present restrictions on bombing North Vietnam would be lifted so as to permit bombing of military targets without the present scrupulous concern for collateral civilian damage and casualties. The aims of this alternative campaign would be to erode the will of the population by exposing a wider area of North Vietnam to casualties and destruction. So we can see here that the idea that bombing Hanoi is going to cause mass devastation is not a figment of the radical imagination, that this is recognized by our own government, and that in fact this is the aim of the present saturation bombing campaign. Now, the important thing I think next to realize is that even the Johnson administration, even with 550,000 American ground troops, which they were theoretically trying to protect, did not undertake the bombing of Hanoi, primarily because of the fear of the widespread civilian opposition, the world public opinion, the fear that the Soviet Union and China would be forced to intervene in a more direct manner. Precisely because it would cause so many civilian casualties, would outrage the conscience of the world. Now, the second point is that this discussion, however, related to the bombing of Hanoi by jets. There was no discussion, as far as one can tell, in the Pentagon Papers of using B-52s against Hanoi. Now, before we go on to discuss what B-52s mean, I think it's important to remember that not only that while the most distinctive feature of the present bombing of Hanoi and Haiphong is the, well, Hanoi really, because the B-52s are being used in Hanoi, is the use of B-52s, that there are 500 jets at the same time bombing Hanoi. Now, for a first-person account of what these jets mean, I might read an excerpt from an essay written by a Laotian peasant who had had his village bombed on March 14, 1967. This is what he wrote about the first bombing raid that had occurred on his village up on the plain of Jars in northeastern Laos, controlled by the communists where he was living. He said, "Four planes of the jet type dropped their bombs together to destroy my village and returned to bomb twice in the same day. They dropped 8 napalm bombs, the fire from which burned all my things, 16 buildings along with all our possessions inside. Our animals were maimed also. Some people who didn't reach this jungle in time were struck and fell, dying most pitifully. By the time the fire died down, it was dark. Everyone came out of hiding to look at the ashes of their houses. Even the rice was all burnt. Everyone cried at once, loudly. Some families had been wounded. We were all heavy-hearted and mournful, almost at the point of losing our minds. The other villagers and I got together to consider this thing. We hadn't done anything, nor harmed anyone. We had raised our crops, celebrated the festivals, and maintained our homes for many years. Why did the airplanes drop bombs on us, impoverishing us this way? As time passed, the planes came and bombed all the neighboring villages, just as they had bombed us." Well, that gives you an idea of what it's like to have suffer one raid by jets on your village. Now we turn to the question of B-52s. Of course, what distinguishes the present bombing and what raises it to the level of one of the greatest atrocities of the 20th century? 100 B-52s are going up over Hanoi every day. Now, as has been widely reported, B-52s generally go up in groups of three. And when they drop their bombs, they bomb in a box pattern. The box is roughly a half a mile by a mile and a half, and within that box, every single thing is destroyed. Over 324 bombs, separate bomb explosions, fall within that box. As I say, one box in Hanoi is inhabited by over 10,000 people. I don't know what the casualties were from these B-52 raids, what the numbers were. We do know that the North Vietnamese tend to underemphasize the total civilian casualties. They're listing them now in the hundreds. But I do know that when you send up B-52s from 30,000 feet to bomb a city, that the casualties are literally unimaginable, particularly during the early days of these raids when they were, of course, carried out at night while people were sleeping by surprise, sneak attack reminiscent of Pearl Harbor or whatever. The people, of course, are not yet prepared for them. And so that the casualties from these kinds of raids, as I say, are unimaginable. Now, I think to get an idea of this, one thing that one can do is to take a walk, perhaps tonight, through your town or city or wherever. And as you walk along, and the walk would last about 15 or 20 minutes to finish the length of a box, you might look for about 4 football fields to the right and then 4 football fields to the left. And try and imagine every building that you could see within that area destroyed, trees broken like matchsticks, the dead and dying everywhere. And when you completed that walk, you would have completed a walk through one B-52 sortie. One, and we're flying hundreds of B-52 sorties every day, not to mention the jets. When we were in Hanoi, we visited hospitals. We saw, for example, a young boy who had been lost his mind as a result of the bombing, another young child who'd lost 2 legs. We went out to a village that had been bombed, just one raid by one jet, one night, 22 people killed, 25 people wounded, 60 or 70 houses destroyed. The people still, about a month later, picking up picking up the damage and trying to rebuild their homes. Again, one raid, and we're flying 500 or 600 a day. Now, I think that the casualties that we saw, i.e. women, children, old people, were not atypical. I think another aspect of this atrocity that one must always recall is that almost all of these victims are civilians. Particularly from these raids over Hanoi. It's true that a good part of the population has been evacuated, but these are mainly school-age children and some mothers. When we were there, we saw hundreds of, it's true, it was not during the bombing, but we would talk to people who were remaining in Hanoi. And there's no doubt that hundreds of thousands of people were caught in this raid. The soldiers are at the front or at the army camps or wherever. The people who remain in the cities are civil servants, merchants, small artisans. Of course, civil servants in North Vietnam embraces a much wider term than it does elsewhere because it is a socialist country. But they're civilians. They're not military. The bombing is almost entirely carried out against civilians, against civilian targets. It's worth recalling also that there are no military targets to speak of in Hanoi. Not only that when people go there like ourselves, you don't see any. But again, this is recognized by our government. Again, quoting from that same Department of Defense study, for example, it states that, quote, other than Haiphong Port, no single target within these areas has any appreciable significance for North Vietnam's ability to supply men and material to the South. Well, you might ask then, what's the purpose of all this? If there are no military targets up there, what is it all about? Well, I've already read the quote saying that the real purpose of it was to erode Hanoi's will. But I think it's also useful to look at some historical parallels, and the one that sticks in my mind most closely is the terror bombing of London during the last 6 months of 1940. If you go back and read Winston Churchill's book on it, he says the following, quote, and then, this is now just before the raids began on London, when all German war aims were disappointed, when invasion was indefinitely postponed for lack of the vital need, air supremacy, there followed the third and last phase, The hope of daylight victory had faded, the Royal Air Force remained vexatiously alive, and Goering, in October, resigned himself to the indiscriminate bombing of London and to the centers of industrial production. Now, if you substitute art and ability for air supremacy as one vital need that the United States lacks to invade North Vietnam, if you substitute the Royal North Vietnamese and NLF forces for the Royal Air Force as the one as what remains vexatiously alive and does not allow Nixon to win victory in Indochina, and you substitute Nixon for Goering, you have a very precise description of present events. I think for the last several years now, we at Project Air War have been arguing that Nixon is bent on total military victory in Indochina, on forcing the North Vietnamese to surrender. And people have found this difficult to accept because it seems so irrational. It's clear that Indochina is at this point peripheral to American needs, American goals, even those of those in power who are turning their attention to the Soviet Union and China. It seems inconceivable that the president would be still interested in military victory at whatever cost. We've stressed that he's already dropped over 4 million tons of bombs, more than any leader in history, that over 6 million people had been killed, wounded, or made homeless during his first 4 years. One talked about the invasion of Cambodia, one talked about the invasion of Laos, and still people couldn't accept the concept that he was interested in military victory. I think, however, that the B-52 bombing of Hanoi must finally lead to the conclusion that the president has no intention of negotiating a settlement in Indochina which will allow the Vietnamese to settle their own affairs, that he is out to force Hanoi basically to submit to his peace terms, which means, in fact, surrendering. Now, before discussing that point, I think it's important to talk for a moment about how rational all this is. That is to say, how much effect will the bombing of Hanoi, the B-52ing of Hanoi, how much effect will that have on the peace negotiations? Will that, in fact, force the North Vietnamese basically to capitulate? Well, I think, once again, reading Winston Churchill is very instructive. Talking about the response of the people of London to this Blitz bombing, he said, quote, "These were the times when the English, and particularly the Londoners, who had the place of honor, were seen at their best, grim and gay, dogged and serviceable, with the confidence of an unconquered people in their bones. They adapted themselves to the strange new life, with all its terrors, with all its jolts and jars." Once again, this is almost a precise description of what will be and what has been the reaction of the North Vietnamese people to all of this. No one who's been to North Vietnam, and certainly myself, doubts that while this bombing is going to kill thousands of people, that its ultimate effect, far from causing the North Vietnamese to capitulate, will be exactly the opposite. It will strengthen their will to fight on. It will give them an added rationale for offensives in South Vietnam, and it will, in fact, increase domestic and international pressure on Nixon to go for a settlement. Coming back to Laos, for example, I might read another excerpt. In the beginning, the people were, as the man implied, terribly afraid of the bombing, almost went crazy from it. But as time went on, they reacted quite differently. And this, again, an excerpt from an essay written by a boy who lived under the bombs, I think brings this out very clearly. He said the following. He said, "But my friends and I did not fear the airplane's menace. We learned a song that the Pathet Lao had composed, written by their air defense soldiers. We loved to sing it together in the rice fields during the rainy season. We would sing this song gaily, and it would encourage the young women and make them happy in their work until they finished. I felt that although I might have to die, it did not matter, that I just had to be happy in the midst of all the sadness of war, of the airplanes dropping bombs till the sky was filled with the sounds of planes or the fire of the anti-aircraft guns. And so we sang with brave hearts. Let us praise the air defense batteries who have the bravery to fire at American airplanes invading our Laotian skies. Flying here, they appear and are shot down and destroyed by our air defense positions. Let us hearken to the sounds of the guns echoing all day as our air defense batteries fire until the Americans disappear.